Just going.
Couple
with
little
it.
Clicks here and there. Welcome back to Upton Empire Fitness Radio, guys. My name is Brian Devins. I'm here with Dana Siriano and Kevin Conley. This is going to be the first episode of a few in our recovery series. We're really excited to talk about this. And this is going to be all things related to recovery, be it training, self-care, anything that's going to help you improve your performance, how you feel, increase vitality. First topic today is going to be about the importance of rest days. I don't know about you guys, but I get quite a few people that despise rest days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I did for a while.
Me too.
It's something about coming in the gym and just going at it. And if I'm not here, I'm not doing anything. And so rest days, like, they didn't exist up until, like, I was like mid 20s when I was going to Cortland, and I made other bad decisions to take rest days out of it.
No, it's funny you even say it. I don't know about you guys, but like, I know a lot of people when they talk about rest days, I always kind of, there's similar like personality traits. Like Kev, like who do you look up to and who are you motivated by when you started going to the gym? Were you watching YouTube and watching like Kelly Muscle and all these guys like rest days? What muscle is that?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it was my uncle. I mean, you've seen him here. He's large. His forearms are the size of, I think, my, like, quads. So I watched him, like, growing up, and he always had this thing when we were talking about diets in particular where he's like, you don't eat for taste. And it was, like, the same thing in the gym. It's like, you don't go to the gym to feel good. You go and you feel bad.
Yeah, it's like that hardcore mentality of do more, get more out of it. And I can appreciate that.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, it just seems like an unrealistic, when now that you guys have been in training for years, yeah. I mean, it's like, it sounds cute, looks good on your Instagram, but let's be real here.
If I you're really doing anything. I look forward to them. Now
yeah.
I do.
Yeah. Agreed.
Especially when you have so much going on otherwise in life. I love just sitting home and doing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yo, let's talk about the evolution, Dana, because that's a really cool topic or statement you just made, because I don't think a lot of people, they'll resonate with a lot of people, because not many people that start going to the gym continue on for long, long periods of time and become part of their life. So just talk about quick, like when you first started and how fitness may have been bigger than everything else going on in your life. I mean,
oh my God,
it
was. It was like the only thing it consumed my entire life. And that was when it was starting to get really big on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you see people posting every day, you assume that they're training every day.
Yeah.
So I would love, and I still love coming to the gym. I'd be so excited. And on a rest day, I'm like, I guess go and do cardio or just like hang out. Like, I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah. And then you become friends with people at the gym. And next thing you know, you're surrounded by people that do that. And it's hard to kind of avoid. And then obviously you have relationships and work, and you've had huge changes in your life over the last few years. Obviously now it's like, it's not like fitness is not important, but guess what? Fitness is probably like the glue that holds things together. And, but it's not the first thing in your head, because it's become such a habit or such part of your life that,
I think I went through quite a few phases where I was obsessed, where it became a chore, second, and now where it's just a part of my routine. Mm-hmm. I wake up at 4. I'm here no later than 5. That would be late for me. I get it done, sets the tone for the day. And if I take a rest day, planned or unplanned, to me it's not the end of the world. I enjoy it. I honestly take Mondays off, as weird as it is. You always hear, never miss a Monday. I take Mondays off.
Depends on what time I plan on training. Mondays are Mondays for me are leg days, which is generally the international chest day. But slowly but surely, at Upton Empire Fitness becoming, everyone does legs Monday. So we may have to reprogram a little bit. So
that's good.
I'll switch
my days to chest day on Monday then. You guys
will
be doing
legs. Go right ahead. Yeah, chest day every day.
You'll have all the equipment to yourself.
Hell yeah.
Dana, if you could break down what, you know, the importance of rest days and, well, why do we take rest days? I mean, what actually occurs to the body? Like, you know, is it because of emotional stress? Is it physical stress? What?
So, I mean, definitely a little bit of both, but exercise specifically creates two types of stress, metabolic and mechanical. So resting is going to allow your body to replace those glycogen stores that you deplete while you're training. And not only that, it's going to allow your body to repair the damage that training is actually causing to those muscles.
Exactly.
So that's from, I would say, a physical standpoint, but even emotionally, and we'll get into this in a little bit when we talk about overtraining, but it's nice to have a day to just reset emotionally.
Yeah. Now, how when you structure a training day, so let's talk about your clients, for example. I mean, you guys have been training for years, so I think that when you start getting a little more advanced, I know, like, I'll structure my rest days based on heavy lifts, what type of movements I'm going to do, and I give myself an hour for recovery, a specific hour set for recovery, depending on what the lift is. Mm-hmm. But when you set up a trainee for rest days, what are some of the things that you guys look for when you decide, okay, how many rest days is this person going to have?
So for me, it depends on the client. I've had, excuse me, novice lifters that I might have on maybe 3 or 4 full body days, and it's maybe 2 on, 1 off, 1 on, 1 off, something like that. But for someone who generally is, I would say, an intermediate lifter, I typically will program at least 48 hours between training a muscle group, again, depending what it is. I have quite a few clients who really want to grow their glutes. So I've tried to get them training glutes 3 times a week. So that sessions are a little bit closer. Yeah,
and I agree with that because there's a pretty large amount of, and especially if you're speaking about the female client base that you have, that supports more volume and a little bit more intensity than we had thought before.
Yeah.
And traditionally, when you talk to someone that may not be in the research field, when you talk about training females, they generally don't go as hard as you possibly could go on. And we'll talk about that in a little bit too.
Unfortunately.
Kev, let's talk a little bit about those windows for rest time, because I know that we were talking about this earlier about optimal rest windows. So when we talk about this, guys, we're talking about how much time should you rest between stimulating muscle groups, not necessarily how much time you should take between exercising. So
Between like muscle groups, I mean, that's basically that's the basis around my program design is muscle groups. If I program a rest day, it's going to be I have clients working anywhere between up to 6 days a week. And that seventh day can be a active recovery, or like an active rest day or active recovery, which we'll touch on in a second. But it all goes into, like, I'm 48 hours of rest in between muscle groups. There's been a lot of research.
Is that you specifically that you're 48 hours?
No.
Or for everyone?
For everybody, pretty much.
I do the same,
Unless, I mean, we can go like really into the nitty gritty and go into like if you're hitting muscles directly versus indirectly. I mean, you know.
If you're looking at a set, so say you did a chest press, okay? Generally, when I write chest press, the main mover is going to be pecs, and then you look at your triceps and maybe anterior delt.
Right.
So when I do that, I usually do like, okay, anterior delt, triceps got a third of a set, and that's what I go with because it's not necessarily the main mover, but it's also a primary mover, or it's a mover to get you to move the weight right in the right direction. So,
yeah.
I think when you look at that, I agree. There's sets per muscle group per week or per month or however you want to periodize it. So,
and as long as you're doing like a solid like set number a week, this can be a whole nother podcast. And I think we've talked about it before. Honestly, is like how many sets do you need a week? I mean, I programmed like triceps 24 hours after chest, but I mean, it's not like I'm hitting a heavy tricep day on my chest day.
Well, yeah, if you do one chest day and you're a 2 chest day a week person and you did, 8 to 10 sets of chest that day, yeah, I guess you can break that down and you maybe only get like, 4 to 6 tricep sets out of that, right?
Again,
you're kind of shooting
the
hip, you're
not
getting...
Well, the triceps are a significantly smaller muscle than
the
chest. So
right.
I would say the amount of time that you need to recover from training triceps is probably a little bit shorter of a window than it would be
my tricep day.
Kevin's got massive triceps.
I'm just kidding.
So basically you go 48 hours, Kevin, go ahead, bro.
Yeah, 48 hours. There was some research studies done, and there's this one that was done on, kind of looked at from Mass. We kind of go off, we do a lot of stuff, Five Stronger Science, awesome tool that we use. But it pretty much talked about the 24, 48, and 72-hour window. It showed that the 24-hour window, you didn't really have any benefit of resting just 24 hours. It was the 48 and the 72-hour group that seemed to recover better, had better gains, as we like to call it, right? So in terms of that, it just looks like that 24-hour window is just too soon. It's too soon. I mean, the glycogen depletion versus...
lactate.
lactate, right? And poor lactic acid, it always gets the kind of like the runaround. It's not the lactic acid, but it's the acid that you just build up, right? You just make your muscles acidic. So between all of that, saw that like the 24-hour group was experienced way more muscle soreness, which led to reduced reps in the next session.
Reduced performance.
Yeah. I mean, if they were hitting, like, let's just say, like 10 good working sets in one set or one session, the next session, 24 hours later, they were hitting like 8 or like 7 or 8. So whereas the 48 hours and the 72 hours, they were hitting all 10 or maybe more for a better result too. So, I mean, that this is a study that I always go back to when I'm thinking about program design and how to map out rest days. And obviously what you said, Dana, depends on the client.
Yeah.
I have Barbara, my girl Barbara.
Yeah.
You know, we're not looking at like 40, like 24 hours of rest in between hitting workouts. Yeah. Stay active. But, you know, it is very, very subjective when it comes to training days, rest days, and ultimately goals, I think.
Yeah, and it's good because you guys mentioned active recovery really quick, and obviously that was something that we wanted to touch on because when I tell people, as far as cardio, so we give cardio prescriptions and protocols that if they're doing nutritional coaching and they're looking for fat loss or even lean gaining, so I generally tell people to do those after training. If we can get them done after training, then absolutely. And just like you're structuring your rest days beyond just like a 48, 72-hour rest period, realistically, how many days a week can that person train? So beyond the physiological effects of what rest is going to do, how much can you work out? So are you going to see, you know, the best results training one day a week? Probably not. Not, you know, you could get results, sure. But we have to also take into consideration what the person can actually do and what's feasible for their schedule, right? But beyond that, trying to get them to do their cardio after training is obviously let's enhance our recovery. So let's keep our tough days tough, like we talked about before we even got on here, and then use our rest days for actual recovery. Now, I also know that people do like to do active recovery, and I am also a promoter of active recovery and doing something on your rest days, like a light cardio. Now, when we talk about rest, there is a couple research articles out, especially more recent in 2015. Vizuela et al., active recovery in the form of light exercise for the fatigued muscle groups helps speed up removal of lactate during the training and thereby increase performance. Now, that's exactly it. I can't say any clearer than that. If you do light exercise, now, this study actually was just walking. Light exercise may not be doing burpees and box jumps and sprints and long distance runs. So
or your HIIT cardio, because that's something HIIT that I want to talk about too.
Correct. So we're going to touch on HIIT. So let's talk about in a second too, because we're going to talk about. So another thing too is your work capacity. Just like Kevin said, in those 24 group subjects, they had a reduction in work capacity or the ability to move more weight. So for example, if you think you're going to do, you know, full body exercises and do complete workouts where you're doing, you know, 15 sets per muscle group, you're going to be there for 4 hours and you're going to do that every single day. Well, there's no really badges that are making progress. So one, you're going to adapt to higher levels of workload and it may not be the best as far as progression, but also you're going to reduce your work capacity your work efforts or your load, and you're not going to progress that much throughout the entire week. Whereas you could have did a lot more efficiently.
Because you're going to be there just trying to get it done. It's not necessarily getting it done and pushing yourself.
Exactly. And now even harmful, there's also research obviously shows harmful active recovery where you're overdoing or overreaching it. Dana, you can touch on this because you want to tell about HIIT. And obviously we're all going to agree with you doing HIIT on rest days depending on the person and what the actual HIIT is. So go ahead.
Yeah, so talking HIIT cardio, and we've talked about this before, I don't mind if someone does HIIT on a rest day. However, I would say let's look at the bigger picture. When have you trained legs last? Sure. When are you training legs next? 100%. So, I mean, if you're training legs the day before and then you're resting the day after and you're going to perform a HIIT session, chances are you're probably not going to perform as well during the HIIT session because you're fatigued.
Yeah.
So even though it's, quote, cardio, you still just train that muscle group the day before.
And just to...
So going back to like what Kevin said, with that study, 24 hours, at that point, you know, it's probably less than that.
And just to reiterate for people that are not our clients that are listening to this, when we talk about HIIT, high-intense interval training, we're not talking about Billy Blanks and how you increase your heart rate a little higher than lower your heart rate and yada, yada, yada. No, we're talking about really intense lower body, lower body dominant propelling of a machine, which is the elliptical, a spin bike, something that's going to allow or require you to spin something or pedal something extremely fast, whether it's sprints outside or pushing a sled or a prowler thing or anything like that. So your lower body is going to get taxed. So we look at that as if it's another lower body training session.
Definitely.
So even, you know, most people talk about the evolution of HIIT when it first began. And it was lower body. It was on a Wingate's bike. Doing sprints till failure.
It was horrible. I've done
And like, when I first started doing HIIT, the first HIIT I ever did was not on a Wingate's bike. It was on a spin bike. And I did resisted sprints till failure. Oh. And I did sets of four. I've only did four sets. Now people are like, oh, four sprints, that's it? Like,
for how many seconds?
But yeah, the first one's like 45 seconds and the rest are like tiny. So what you're supposed to do is you do your sprint, you get off the bike, wait till the lactate acid kind of fades away, you get feel better than you then sprint again.
So you're getting entirely off the bike. You're not lightly pedaling.
I got off and started walking around. The first one I was able to kind of lightly pedal, but I got off and walked around. Anything to get my body back to being able to think it's going to perform well. And I tell you what, the first few weeks, the reduction in performance after each interval was pretty intense. But those were crazy intense. And I mean, looking at it now, I feel like my HIIT setup's a little bit different now than it was then because we know a lot more about EPOC. But that's for another podcast.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, a HIIT.
Gonna get on a tangent over here.
Yeah, HIIT. HIIT's fun, especially on the Wingate test. But again, the tangent. I don't know how we got here. Where were we? Overtraining HIIT.
So we were talking about basically the reason we're talking about HIIT is because of harmful active recovery.
Oh, right, yes. Right.
And obviously we could talk about, you know, Kev, want to segue into like autoregulation and understanding what autoregulation means to somebody that is not even following a program to the sets and reps. They're just kind of going and training intuitively, for example, not necessarily totally intuitive. I would say maybe someone that's like an intermittent trainee that is, you know, I'm doing chest Monday, I'm doing back Wednesday, and so on and so forth. Like, what do you, what is autoregulation, first of all?
So autoregulation is, it's pretty much like just a form of programming that it's really good intuitive training, right? Knowing when you're making gains, like in layman's terms, right? So it really takes into fatigue, right? So, when we're talking about autoregulation, it's basically getting your body ready to, perform, adequately or, the best that it can for a certain period of time, right? So autoregulation can have, autoregulation isn't just this blanket statement either. Somebody is going to experience autoregulation is very subjective. It's a marathon runner is going to have different autoregulation than a powerlifter, different athletes. So pretty much it's like that. Are you going to be able to figure out what's a working set? And I think that's pretty much where like a lot of people kind of go wrong in terms of like working sets versus warm up sets, or that's a whole nother.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah. So when you say like, you know, say you're doing squats for RPs of 9. This is a good example. One rep max for an RP of 9. Take one single at 9, right? Mm-hmm. 1 week it's different than the next, and it progresses over how much time. So I know a lot of people will go in the tank. Like I got a program that I've written for a few people where they take a single at 9, and they take 60 to 80% of that for working sets. Mm-hmm. So each week that number can be, I'm talking about my girl Melissa Lee right now. Could be 240 one day, it could be 220 the next week, and so on and so forth. So it's a little discouraging when people say that, but it's almost like a natural thing to happen. So it's not necessarily a bad thing either.
No, definitely
not. For that to occur, especially when you're taking those weekly nines, you know.
Those weekly nines add up.
Sometimes it's a 9, sometimes it's a 10. You think it's going to be a 9, but you realize, oh, you know what? As you're doing your warm-up set, you're like, today's not going to be a good day.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
The other day, I had one of those days. I trained on Saturday. I got really ambitious here, and I had a really good, like, upper body day. I hit some arms, and on Monday, It was the last week of mine and Brad's program, and we have the bench deadlift superset, which is insane to begin with. But I got through about two sets, and I was like, shit, this is not good. I had to call it. I had to be like, I'm not, this is not going to be a good training session. Like, I was like, was it rhabdo? I was experiencing rhabdomyolysis. Oh, man, rhabdo, man. I thought I was going to be in a wheelchair walking out of here.
Well, and there's a lot that influences. Again, yeah. Maybe this is a topic for another time, and we probably have talked about it, but there's a lot that influences how you might feel on one given day compared to a previous session or even the next session.
So many factors that are involved in that.
And that's where, like, I guess when we talked about earlier when how did you used to train or, like, what it was when I was younger, I wasn't missing a day. I was coming in no matter what. Now, man, if I got to call it, I'm calling it. I'm okay with it. And I'm 100% completely okay with missing a day. I see a lot of my clients, I have to go to the gym, and I've been writing on my spreadsheets for, like, the training schedule. I don't know if you guys use the same thing. It's kind of like we use similar templates, but Monday, Tuesday, I put all green and I put whatever works, bro. Like, whatever
sometimes
works.
It works for certain people. Again, I mean, we can talk about, we're going to get into a couple more of these like little tactics that we each use, but I just want to reiterate too about recovery. And obviously we all work with different walks of life and people with different goals. But I want to talk about gender differences between trainees. I think this is a really important thing to talk about, especially since Dana and I have primarily female client base. Kev, I guess you as well. And the differences between how you would set up rest days for female athletes or female trainees, because the stereotype is that women aren't going to do as much, which that's couldn't be more far from the truth. Especially with recovery rates. Now, women recover significantly faster than men. And I tell that to people, and they're like, there's no way. And I'm like, well, they ask why, you know? So we talk about evolution and how women were actually, you know, like a hunter-gatherer evolution and talk about those things. But beyond that, let's talk about today's society, right? So why do women recover a little bit faster? Here's three main points that I feel that women will recover a lot faster. One, estrogen. Women have higher estrogen. It's anti-catabolic hormone that helps muscle repair and reduces protein breakdown during exercise. Obviously, that's going to help, you know, spare muscle. And you guys are going to have a little bit more type 1. This is my second point. Women have more type 1 fibers than men. They're also slightly larger, so when they do convert after exercise, you'll create more type 1 fibers. So what that means is those are endurance-type fibers. And my third point here, women clear metabolic byproducts due to lower arterial blood pressure during exercise compared to men. There's research on all three of those topics, and the three reasons why women are far more superior than men when it comes to recovery.
Yeah.
Not only between sets and reps, but also during rest days. So certainly something to consider when you're setting up your rest day. So you may see a client that may, you know, went through a nasty leg day, and 36 hours later, not 48, they're ready to hop and do it again.
Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously there's difference too. I want to put a caveat to that too, because I put this footnote at the bottom of my notes here, is that women on oral birth control may not experience faster recovery rates than women not taking oral birth control or any hormone-releasing birth control. So it's a really cool study that was done in 2015 that compared men, women on oral birth control, and women not on oral birth control, right?
Birth control containing
oral contraceptives, ethyl estradiol. I'm gonna say this
close enough.
It's a manufactured estradiol, right? Mm-hmm. Oral contraceptive-free women experienced far less muscle damage post-workout, which was likely from reduction in estrogen, free testosterone, progesterone, and IGF-1. So when you're on these hormone-releasing things with like progestin, mm-hmm. you're gonna see a reduction in the things that allow us to recover faster and build muscle. So estrogen, free testosterone, progesterone, and IGF-1.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. But even looking, so all of my clients so far have been women. So even looking at the volume that they're able to handle, I think women generally have a harder time utilizing the RPE scale, but we can combat that in other ways by adding more sets, more reps, mm-hmm. more training days and the amount of volume that women are able to handle. I mean, I don't know about you, but like, are you doing sets of 15 to 20, 15 to 30?
which is optimal too. I mean, it's optimal for women to train in those higher rep ranges. That's been shown and proven. That's a good thing to pick up on as a coach mm-hmm. and as a person that's just developing their own training protocols. Nothing wrong with high reps. I like to scatter some reps here and there, sprinkle some heavy singles and triples in there. But, I mean, overall, yeah. your volume can certainly, you can handle a lot more. In fact, close to double of what a guy would be able to handle mm-hmm. When we look at matching strength. So,
yeah. Between, like, I don't know, like, from what I picked up, it's with, like, women versus men in terms of, like, training and rest days or just what they can handle. Men are dumb. Like, we just go in. We're like, literally brute strength.
We come to lift the weights.
Yeah. There's definitely physiological factors that may cause that. But I also don't want to get too far into, like, hormone differences and gender differences, because we're definitely going to have a pretty neat podcast on that. And I'm sure you guys will, you know, really enjoy it too. Because we can go into, you know, PCOS, women with PCOS, and their differences in training. So, and they may be a little stronger and recover differently. And, you know,
I definitely agree with the higher rep ranges. I mean, I throw a lot of my women into, like, the really high rep ranges. I mean, I've had the guys do, like, sets of, like, 30 before. They don't like it.
Well, it makes sense, because if someone has, you know, more,
yeah, type 1,
type 1 fibers, yeah, I mean, you want to go on more. That, right? Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just makes sense, and it works for them, and it works well.
So I just want to circle back to rest days and active recovery. So what I typically suggest for people doing, because especially a lot of people, they don't like to rest, and they don't know what to do. So active recovery. So that would be, on your rest days, I would suggest, you know, performing your lifts and your miss on those days. Your HIIT sessions, I mean, it depends. I would definitely talk with your coach and talk about how your training days are set up, just to, you know, make sure that you're going to perform optimally, not only during your training sessions, but during the HIIT session. Some other things that you can do, walking, you know, low intensity cycling or elliptical, that can go right in line with your lift sessions. Mm-hmm. So lifts, for people that might not know what that means, it's low intensity steady state. So that would be things like walking, low intensity cycling, elliptical work. I would even go into, say, you know, foam rolling.
Okay, mobility stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, mobility stuff. There was a study that I read that showed foam rolling gives a better result, or it works better in conjunction with other modalities like your walking, your low intensity cycling,
sure.
massage if you're able to. It went into a bunch of other things, cryotherapy, compression garments, stuff everyone doesn't have access to.
Yeah, because it's not necessarily like a passive stretch. You're actually working that muscle and you're activating it in a way. And I'm sure it goes a lot into like inflammation and response to foam rolling. If you're doing foam rolling, you know, properly, you know, you're causing quite a response. So
Well, and even I would talk about like proper foam rolling. You don't want to be foam rolling at like a pain level 10 out of 10.
If you're using a steel pipe to foam roll your first time, like, you're going to hit my IT bands with this lead pipe. That's good.
Yeah. Foam rolling should hurt, but, I mean, I would
it
say
be, yeah, it should
it
be crippled.
Should be like a
we got that, like, torture device out there with the pegs all over it. The
rubber
the
roller.
Foamer roller with the pegs
on
it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't mess with that thing. Yeah. I used to be able to get on a PVC pipe, but
I did it one time. It looked like it went through the war.
And even with foam rolling, it's not something that you do for a couple minutes and you're done. If you're doing it effectively, it is probably going to take you closer to, you know, 10, 15 minutes.
My views on rest days are completely in line with yours, Dan. If someone needs to take a complete rest day, I tell them I don't have them change or alter their way of life much unless it's, you know, needed. Right. So if you're a busy person and you like to, you know, you're moving around most of your day and that's your job requires or whatever, continue to do that. But as far as exercise goes and intense workloads, obviously avoid that at all costs, just because we don't want to, you know, affect performance. Unless we do have one of those situations where we do have, you know, intermediate to advanced trainee that's only allowed to train 3 days a week, maybe a little more lenient for that person to do a little bit more, you know, maybe running or something like that. I'm totally against running and most people are going to laugh when they hear I said that, but. something I may consider, you know, given the circumstances. But I definitely think that lifts miss, you know, again, if you could do miss after workouts, even better. But obviously, time constraints and being in the gym, not everyone can be here for 2 hours. So,
yeah. Even just moving in general, like if you have chores and stuff to do at home, yeah. You're moving
walking,
around,
gardening,
getting in steps.
Anything. I've told people not to come to the gym before. I've seen clients that are like in the intermediate to advanced category, and they're starting to develop a. I see it often in beginners too. They develop a kind of a bad relationship with the gym that if they don't come, they've done bad. Or they're not complete, or they lost the week.
An emotional response to not being at the gym. And we just talked about some beginning things like mm-hmm. this is their part of their life now. Like this may be the highlight. And I don't want to talk about difference in scenarios with people. Like we may talk about the divorced guy that just comes in and now he's like, you know, he's back in the gym and that's his primary social, a large part of his social life. Right. But is it causing them issues? Like if you have a client that now it's like, okay, it's affecting recovery, mm-hmm. When they're not here. I mean, if you have a client telling you like, I don't feel good when I'm not at the gym, I'll be honest with you. I'm not the type of person to tell them not to come to the gym, come to the gym. And well, first of all, don't talk my ear off if you're at the gym. Okay. But if you're going to come here, do something like stretching, mobility, we have foam rollers. Most gyms have foam rollers and mobility stuff. There's things you can do, because eventually, that will go on.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, when it comes to like the emotional distress, like what's going to make you happiest, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe different. I can't tell you, you know, I like taking my rest days and I love being at the gym.
Yeah.
But I can find something else that makes me happy too. But I can't say that for everyone else. Either,
yeah. Right? I've told people who like have like a second hobby or like a second, like, or if they're into like sport, whatever it's golf, you know, kayaking, I'm like, look, take the weekend. I don't want to see you in here.
Yeah. Go if they're stressing results because they need to take a rest day, that's the big difference. If this person's stressing results, like, I'm having to take a rest day, I'm not going to have results. That's an issue. Then that's something you want to address. It's not necessarily, you know, I want to be there because I love being there. Yeah. If that's the case, that's great. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. But if taking your rest day is like, if I take a rest day, I'm going to lose muscle, I'm going to gain fat.
And it's not the end of the world.
Right. No.
It is not. I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm someone that really does not know how to relax. However, I look forward to my rest days and doing just that, relaxing.
Yeah.
It's funny you even said that because like relaxing in terms of
cleaning and then sitting on the couch with my cats.
I was going to say, I've seen some pretty relaxing photos from your Instagram. But when I talk about relaxing, because I was literally talking to Alyssa about this over the last couple of days, is that I don't like to relax, and I'm not saying I don't like to sit down. I like to, my mind has to move and do things. It has to read. It has to, like, I have to constantly be doing something, but I feel good doing that. Yeah. And then I'm not saying I can't sleep well, because now we can go into the sleep conversation of rest and your importance of sleep. That'll be another part of recovery. So, you know, those are important things, and we'll touch on those as well when it comes to, you know, stress management and sleep. Those are huge parts of recovery that we want to talk about, and we're going to get our girl T-Nails on here because I know she wants to get into that one. But I think that when you look at it in terms of stress, I can go to sleep soundly and not stress about, you know, not being able to do something. I'm not that busy of a person mentally, but I do enjoy activating my brain, if that makes sense. Yeah. I know a lot of people think that, and like they're not addressing the elephant in the room. So if they're, you know, not seeing progress and there's stress outside of the gym, may not necessarily be just from a rest day or from the gym at all. It's probably something you don't necessarily want to address, which is generally the elephant in the room, and something that's a little bit bigger and, you know, in going on in your life.
Yeah. And I think this is a really good segue into, like, with all the stress, the lack of sleep, or not taking a rest day, doing too much, I think this is a good segue into overtraining, which, I mean...
Kev, do you believe in overtraining?
I absolutely believe in it, but in terms of...
extent.
Yeah, like, it's overtraining syndrome, okay? Like, there's, like, two avenues that we can talk about, like, overtraining, where, like, people are like, oh, yeah, I'm overtraining, but, like, there's overtraining syndrome that messes you up. Like, I mean, like... emotionally, physiologically, like your hormones are out of whack. Like it can take an athlete out for a year. Overtraining syndrome can take it out for a year.
Depending on the type. Because in my research, I found there's three different types of, I would say two types of overreaching, functional and non-functional. Yep. And then the overtraining syndrome that you're referring to would be the third, which can take you out for
overtraining syndrome is like a big deal, right? So, and that exists to reach overtraining syndrome. Like, I feel like that's like the, like a perfect chemically balanced like thing to do. I think athletes, absolutely, they can achieve overtraining syndrome pretty quickly. You'll see it. Or the people that are like, I'm doing 3-a-days. I'm waking up doing fasted cardio, which that's another conversation. But fasted cardio. I'm eating 1,000 calories a day because I want to have a six-pack in 2 weeks. I have all the stress going on. I have practice. I have workouts. I have this. I have girlfriend problems. I have boyfriend problems. I have, like, yeah, like those people that, like, I feel like though they can achieve overtraining syndrome pretty quickly.
So, like, and not what kind of symptoms? Do you want to talk about, like, what kind of symptoms we would see with that? Like, what would give insights? So, that would be a lot of different things.
Yeah, you have a lot, like,
yeah, go ahead,
I do, yeah. So, in extreme cases, it would be like amenorrhea for women. In more mild cases, or even just generally across the board, it would be labile moods, irritability, mood swings. Signs that your immune system is declining. So that would be like getting sick, feeling tired all the time. Overtraining can lead to increases in cortisol and adrenaline, which would lead to you sleeping poor, having a hard time falling asleep, waking up in the middle of the night, insomnia, waking up feeling tired. And even going on to say you're experiencing DOMS or even just immediate muscle soreness without the introduction of any kind of new stimulus. So say you've been on the same program doing the same kind of thing and you're just sore.
Yeah. And like in sore. I mean, like, you can be sore.
Sore whereas you're walking. Like, I mean, you might have a little bit of a
like limp in your
in your gait, right? In your step, and that's usually normal because like I just want to touch on when people hear these things on, you know, radio podcasts, Instagram, they get into, you ever hear of med student syndrome where they start, med students were reading things over and over again, and they started thinking that they had the actual case.
Yeah.
We see it on social media.
Yeah.
I have anterior pelvic tilt. I got to do this. I have a wink. I have butt wink. You know, so I have butt wink.
Everybody has butt wink.
I'm gluten intolerant. So, that's another topic. So anyways, you know, things like that. So again, a lot of our, when you guys are working with us, I'm telling you right now, you're probably not going to be overtraining because we're going to make sure that that doesn't occur. If you start doing things on your own, and freelancing, I mean, then we have issues, but, you know, communication with your coach, but
definitely,
again, those are extreme cases. If you're getting to that point, I mean, generally that's when your body tells you, like, I got to stop. We're talking about the autoregulation thing. Definitely. Usually it's like a stop sign, a roadblock. Why am I debilitating? But, you know, if you're debilitating or debilitated, excuse me, I can't speak, probably a good chance that you've overreached a little bit.
Definitely. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, like, I was on a program with Brad and I was overreaching big time. I felt like shit. I checked off about all, like, almost every one of those boxes that you just talked about, Dana. And again, this auto-regulation, I told him, like, the last week I was doing it, I got through, like, this, we had, like, four to five training days a week. And the last, like, week that I did it, I think on the second week day, I go, dude, this is the last week. I can't do anymore. I didn't go up in any weights. I actually went down in most of my weights.
Yeah.
And I felt like shit. I did not feel good.
That was right before your one reps, no?
Yeah.
I feel it was close. I remember you talking about it.
Because I tested my one reps afterwards, and I was hurting. I mean, I was not having a good time. And that auto-regulation, right? I noticed I wasn't going up in lifts. I didn't feel good. I didn't even want to come to the gym. I didn't want to be here. I didn't want to do it. And I go, okay,
there's a problem.
That now it's time. Like, let's take a week off. Let's reassess. And
even generally, those overreaching weeks, Kev, are generally, if you structure like a, you know, a 4-week cycle, you're doing, you know, you're building up to this overreaching week. You deload, come back, and kind of cycle through. You were doing lots and lots of volume, like, week after week.
Stupid.
So
yeah, it was stupid. It was fun. But
yeah, it was fun. Did lots of volume. It all worked out pretty good. But, you know, looking back at it, maybe during those, maybe taking more rest days and coupling up on different training body parts. Maybe obviously that's, you're doing your own research when you write your own program. And I just by, you know, doing it over and over again is, I usually think I can do a lot more than I can. So I've definitely written a program where I get through, okay, I don't know how many.
Well, and also that's where deloads can come into play.
Yeah, deloads, taper backs.
I think my biggest issue with that.
We're definitely going to talk deloads and tapers. We're giving all you guys the inside first episode of the recovery series.
I think my biggest one was like I was under eating quite a bit. I think for a program like I ran, like it was like a German volume training, like it was modified German volume training, but I needed to be eating probably up to like 3,500 calories a day. And I was probably at 22. I mean, I was just
especially if you're not optimizing nutrition tracking.
Yeah, like I think that was one of the biggest issues. But yeah, it's a thing. Overtraining is definitely, I guess, overtraining syndrome is a serious big thing. But overtraining, in terms of like, just coming to the gym every day, if you kind of like do it like, not leisurely. I don't know. We say not a hobby, but like if you're like a general athlete, like just kind of like coming in, and like getting in shape, right? Versus physique.
Actively pursuing a goal that demands training or requires training. Right?
I mean, if you have a good coach, you shouldn't be overtraining. Like, it
just the moral of the
happen.
Story is
rest.
If Instagram posts of no days off resonate with you, you should hire a coach and not one that believes in that either.
Yeah.
You guys got anything else you want to add? We're going to wrap it up here. Kev, Dana?
I think, you know, people should kind of just try to steer away from the thought that rest days are an end-all, be-all. It's ruining everything. Yeah, they're not. They're important. They're helping you. They're helping your body. Take them.
Yep. It does. There's no badge of honor in it, and I understand the thought process, but also know that rest days are going to help. We grow when we sleep. We grow when we rest. We, you know, it's recovery. They're absolutely necessary, and I agree, Dana. Don't look at them as a negative.
Your rest days are just as important as your training days.
Yep.
That's 100%. Stop looking at it as like a big bad wolf in the room. Like Dana said, take them.
Play the long game. You can't do 7 days a week hard training forever. So, guys, if you want to check us out on Instagram, it's at upstandempirefitness.com. At Upstand Empire Fitness on Instagram. It is upstandempirefit.com website or UEF Coaching. That's where we put most of our training and all of our other stuff. Kev, go ahead with your Instagram handle. I don't remember all these things.
I got KD. I still got KDCon 520. Okay. KDCon 520. I got to change it. I'm taking.
For now, it's KDCon.
I'm taking
20. Dana, what do you got?
I've got DL Seriano.
Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you guys coming on with me. And this was definitely a good topic. Hope you guys like it. If you have any questions, shoot us a message on Instagram, Facebook, wherever you guys want to do. Have a good one.